Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 491st episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I am still a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia, and unfortunately, I'm back from my sabbatical as well.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at the U of A. If you tuned in last time, we brought a returning star. Not that Tony wasn't a star as well, but we brought a returning star back, and it's Mike Kolber to talk to us today about emergency room dyspepsia. Mike, can you introduce yourself again?
Sure. Thanks, guys. I thought you were bringing back Guy Lafleur. I was like, where are you? My favorite hobby. Where
did he go? We don't get real stars on here.
Half stars. Yeah, 2.5 Google reviews. Yeah, thanks, guys. Mike Kolber, family physician, Peace River Rural Academic at the University of Alberta. And I, too, had a shortened sabbatical, 6 months, and back at her, and happy to be at her, and happy to chat with you guys.
And we will only mention COVID just then. We're not mentioning it at all in this rest of this podcast, because we're going to talk about a very different topic, but it's all about how do we treat dyspepsia in the emergency room. And this, for surely, this has to be a very common thing, Mike. And I know you're everything GI, and you're very familiar with this topic.
You bet. So prior to becoming full-time academic, I was a full-fledged family physician in Peace River, and you bet, eMERGE, babies, the whole nine yards. And we would see dyspepsia and eMERGE, and the nurses would be, you want to do a pink lady or a white knight or whatever. And I'm like, sounds good. And it makes you think, do you ever wonder where some of this stuff comes from? Like, who came up with this?
And maybe you might want to explain, because I don't know if everyone knows what those are, because you can, the mind boggles.
Yeah. So pink lady is Pepto plus xylocaine. White knight, I think, is Gaviscon plus some type of lidocaine, xylocaine. And so basically it's an antacid with a little bit of topical lidocaine. And we seem to give it for these people that present with kind of acute or worsening upper GI complaints. And it seems to work like a hot damn. And so we decided, like, where did that come from? And I was surprised. Two things. Number one is, where did that come from? And twofold, there was a recent paper in 2020 that looked at this and said adding lidocaine to your regular concoction of an antacid really didn't make a difference. So a medical student and myself decided, Ginny Ma, we looked at this and tried to figure out, what is the evidence? And so I'm going to back up a bit to about 1990. So I was just pre-med school, and basically 1990 study found 73 patients randomized to antacid or antacid plus viscous xylocaine. And at 30 minutes, it found that the combination antacid plus lidocaine was better for pain score improvement, again, at 30 minutes than antacid alone. And substantially, like 41 versus 9 points mean scale of maiden pain improvement. I believe this was a 100-point scale. And so, wow, that was substantially better. The acceptable pain relief for the combo was about 70% versus about 35% for antacid alone. So you only had to treat three people with the combination antacid and lidocaine versus antacid alone to improve one more. So that was fascinating. And I firmly believe that's probably what started this. And so 73 patients started. All of you that work eMERGE and go, yeah, we use that all the time, or have used that all the time for 40 years, that's probably where it came from. I just want to highlight that the clinicians weren't blinded in this study, because this is a study that seems to be the outlier compared to the next two. So fast forward 15 years, the next study, probably somebody goes, God, we're doing this based on just a study of 73 patients. 113 patients in this study were randomized to an antacid plus an antispasmodic, or an antacid plus an antispasmodic plus lidocaine. So a one, two, or three. And at 30 minutes, there was no difference between any of these three arms. And so that was interesting. So that's no difference. Antacid plus antispasmodic, or antacid, antispasmodic, and lidocaine. So fast forward another 15 years. Remember, things happen slowly in medicine. Another 15 years to 2020. 89 patients randomized to an antacid plus lidocaine. And then there was two different types of viscous solutions the numbing agents, lidocaine or viscous lidocaine. And at 30 minutes, again, there was no difference in mean pain score improvement. Interestingly, for this one, the overall acceptability was higher for those just with antacid alone than antacid plus lidocaine or viscous lidocaine. And I think that's important. And I think it comes down to when I try and have learners up in Peace River, I often find that once you get the diagnosis right, often there's class effects and the fine tuning and the complex making and doses and all this stuff. It often doesn't make a difference. Once you get the diagnosis right, many things will make a difference. And so I think 2 out of 3 studies showed that adding the lidocaine to an antacid really doesn't make a difference. The one study that showed a difference was unblinded. The clinicians were unblinded. These other ones, everybody was blinded. And you wonder if that's the difference. So I would say it's not a hill to die on. But again, in my life, and I think if Moretin emerges, I think simplicity is reasonable. And I think antacid by itself both gets a similar pain relief and pain outcome. And actually, if you believe the most recent study, the patients find it more acceptable than the combo products.
Yeah. And the good thing about dyspepsia is it usually goes away. Mm-hmm. So that's the
unless it's not dyspepsia. And I think
exactly.
That's
the, yeah.
Because in the last study, 14% of these patients that showed up actually had a cardiac diagnosis. And we know that females present atypically with acute coronary syndromes. And I think that just because they get better with an antacid, and I've had a number of cases that you have to have the high units of suspicion that's cardiac. Why are they in your emergency department? Really, is it GI? And is it something else? And again, it comes to the initial diagnosis. If it really is non-cardiac and it's GI, whatever you give them, they're going to do better and they're going to get better. I would just say, please rule out the cardiac. 14% of those 89 patients in the last study ultimately had a cardiac diagnosis. And I think it just highlights the fact that not all that presents as GI is GI. Yeah.
And Mike Allen, you must have had experience with this in your practice.
Well, first of all, I am going to continue to use a Pink Lady both for my patients and for myself, mostly because it has a great name for marketing. And you close your eyes and you can imagine those little pink fairies in one of the Disney animated movies kind of floating around and waving a magic wand and fixing everything. So, Mike, you can. The science isn't nearly as compelling as the name.
As the image, lady. Yeah.
And what's the other one? You said
The White Knight's not as fun. I really like the Pink Lady as the name better than the White Knight.
Yeah, I know that's connotations there that are all wrong. But it's fascinating to me when we kind of shed a light on belief systems that, you know, were flawed. And then this one study that unblinded clinicians, you can imagine them going in because we believed in this intervention in a huge way. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine going in. So how do you think your pain is? Do you think it's better? It's better, right? Like you can imagine that we could easily be directing these answers, especially because a lot of reports are based not on a patient's reported improvement of symptoms, but the clinician reported improvement in symptoms. And so that is historically the case in research. And you can imagine where that would really drive these outcomes if we believed in them. And you have to understand, like, the research historically shows that when we as clinicians believe in something, we try and modify research outcomes to be in favor of what we believe in. So we'll circumvent how treatments are allocated, all sorts of things in research. So it does make you scratch your head. I wonder if that was the, because the differences, as you point out, Mike, are very big between the study in 1990 versus the other two.
Yeah. Correct.
And what would be fascinating is there's no arm where they didn't give antacids either, because even that, and I've never looked for that information, but boy, there's a lot of power around the concept of antacids. Now, the nice, the good, it's kind of a useful thing about antacids is that they, you know, you can and do expect an immediate response, you know, and so you can actually, you know, when it comes to things like antacids, and if you have, you know, sort of dyspepsia and you take it and it goes away pretty, you know, within, you know, a minute or so, that's pretty powerful evidence just from an anecdotal perspective. But boy, I don't know, you guys maybe not old enough, but it used to be that, you know, the treatment for peptic ulcer disease was antacids in decent doses 7 times a day for, you know, 4 to 8 weeks. And that was because we had the belief that ulcers were secondary to, stress and or acid and all that sort of stuff. So there's always so many things that we need to look at. And but this one's an interesting one. Mike, I don't know if you, did you see anything on antacids just alone?
No.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never looked at it. So we're not saying they don't work.
And we really, the question was the combo.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't think we found antacids alone. We, you know what? I have to go back and look, but I don't think we did.
Yeah.
No, you bet. It brings to light, you know, non-cardiac, or sorry, GI-related chest pain.
Yes.
We used to give trials when I was doing training of the equivalent of 80 milligrams of omeprazole.
Yeah.
And if they still had chest pain, then it wasn't GI. I took it around either way. And I would just really highlight that even people with cardiac origins, even though it sounds funny, even I agree with you, James, that, you know, rapid relief makes you think that this should be GI related, mm-hmm. but there's still obviously cases of people getting better and next ECG does show the STEMI. Yeah. And so I would just encourage, you know, if in doubt, repeat ECGs. And if they never showed up with, never had GI problems before, and they're presenting with GI, especially as a female, please just make sure you rule out the cardiac.
Patients, Mike, that have that, who said that they've gotten better with PPIs or what have you, or antacids, and both have argued with me about the need for them to get a scope, to go into eMERGE to get an ECG, et cetera, and to get worked up. Yes. And yeah, so I'm sure there's some that I'm misremembering that were not cardiac, but there are two that stood out for me that were clearly cardiac or clearly afterwards cardiac, and it was a quagmire leading into it, and there was reassurance on the patient's behalf, not just the doctor's, that they had got relief from this, and it was, you know, one of them had a scope as well, just to be sure, and the scope was absolutely clear, and that was after their MI, after they were treated for their MI, they also had a scope.
Yeah. And the problem, right, even with that logic is you know as well as I do, that chest pain associated, if it's a coronary thing, waxes and wanes. And so, of course, people who have chest pain, if they have it, and it will get better even if it's cardiac origin. And if you take an antacid, you'll go, well, it was because of that.
Yes. There's a whole bunch of reasons there, James. You're lying in bed now instead of what you were doing before. You're at absolute rest.
Yeah.
You've often got oxygen on anyway, just to be safe. You're surrounded by people who are taking care of you. There's an element, there is a stress to it, there's no doubt, but there's also a reassurance, right, that something's being done for you. So, and then the natural effect of time. So there's 1,000 reasons. And Mike, you do a good job in this TFP of reminding us that, well, we're addressing the pink lady mystery. You did a good job as well calling out one of the things that can lead us to serious issues, missing important things, quite distinct from the actual dyspepsia itself.
Yeah. And I've also talked to people who will take things like, you know, in the olden days, cimetidine and then ranitidine and then the proton pump inhibitors and say they get, you know, it works within minutes. Mm-hmm. And you go, that literally is impossible. It needs to go somewhere first, and it, you know, it doesn't.
Where does it go, James?
I don't even want to talk about where it goes. I can tell both of you where I'd like you to go, but that's a different story. but it's that. And we're neither of the three of us are immune to that. Oh, I did it and it worked. We're not immune to that.
Oh, goodness, no.
You know, it's such an enticing thing. And we always have to remind ourselves of what is the natural history of anything. And most of the time it's to get better. And so, as we've talked about for 491 episodes, is that, you know, fortunately, most things get better. So no matter what we do, we're going to look like we did something of value. And that's where the pink lady would come in, is that most people get better, most people go home, and it makes you feel like you're doing something special.
Yeah, you bet. I almost liken it to a crazy eMERGE in Peace River, where where the frantic nurse is trying to remember how many parts of Maalox versus lidocaine and this mm-hmm. and that. And I love it when you find something simple that works just as well as complex. Mm-hmm. And to me, again, it just comes down to that first D, you know. If you get the right diagnosis, any of these things will work. And my bias is I like simple versus complex interventions.
No, for sure. No, this is, a really nice little tools for practice that just, I love them when they go after these sort of things that we believed really worked well. And you go, well, maybe not. And that's that sort of healthy skepticism that we've tried to do for years. And hopefully we don't fall into the cynic thing. I know both of Mike's do, but you know, I try very hard not to.
Oh, you are the king of positive thinking.
I would say that's not true, but it's if you believe it, I love it. That's wonderful. but anything else on this topic, guys, or anything else, Mike, that you need to sell?
Mike Kolber is selling the pipe conference.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Pipe Conference, October. Jeez, I should know the dates.
So October 22 and 23, Mike, because I
yes,
just.
That's right.
My last 22 meeting.
22 and 23, hybrid, virtual, and at this stage, some in person. That might change if you haven't read the news.
about Alberta, and we encourage about you, Alberta. We encourage you yes. not to.
Yes, we might host it at, maybe we'll host it at Mike Allen's Island. Maybe that would be great. But yeah, so feel free, please sign if you wish to come. We think it's a great educational opportunity and event. The price for in-person is the same as the price for online or virtual. And so we could easily flip people across if need to go all virtual. And we think it's going to be an exceptional event. Friday, half day, Saturday, all day. Join with your clinic. Learn with your colleagues. We love that. And for more information, go to... I think if you Google PIPE 2022, you'll find the website.
And PIPE is not spelled P-I-P-E.
Oh, I'm sorry. P-E-I-P. Practical mm-hmm. Evidence for Informed Practice. So P-E-I-P 2022. Yeah. 2021. Pardon me. 2021.
Yeah. And it's not the PEEP show. It's the PIPE conference. That's the it's a key yeah. difference there. That so.
they both exist.
They both exist and... One is not related to our group at all.
Yeah. Anything else, guys?
No, I think
that's good.
Okay.
That's great. Thanks.
So I think we'll leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
So long for now.